Another edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch is up and running. Hi, it's John Williams, and we are thrilled that you're here. Pete Zimmerman is our producer, and on Wednesdays at this time, Terry Savage is our first guest, the nationally syndicated financial columnist and the author of The Savage Truth on Money, a new edition of that. Details at terrysavage.com. Terry, can we start by my reading something that you wrote?
Okay.
On your newsletter, you said, in the meantime, here are some important facts about what comes next. You were writing Revenge of the Nerds about what happened with GameStop, and you said hedge funds have lost $20 billion on paper, but have maintained most of their short positions in GameStop and other stocks. Only about 8% of the short interest has been covered in GameStop. What does that mean?
It means that the battle wasn't over, and I wrote that 2 days ago when the stock was just under $400 a share. As I look now, it's about $101. The bet that many of the professionals put on at $20 a share and lower that the company would probably go bankrupt is still existent. But forget what the big guys do. Think about all the people that bought GameStop stock at $425 a share. They're going to lose most of their money. If they bought it at $30 a share, they've still got a nice profit. But inevitably, I'm going to give you something that just literally this few minutes as I was listening to the intro hit my email. It's from a company called Stilt.com. It's a blog that is a financial blog. It said, here's a survey we just produced. Robinhood users' account balances have grown nearly 350% over the last month. Sure, if you bought something at 20 or 30 and it went to 300, you made a lot of money. But 43%, this is a key, of Robinhood users have a FICO score, a credit score, under 650. So we're talking about people, if when your credit score is under 650, you've already got debt problems. Nearly half of Robinhood's users are people that took a little money, thought that, well, you know, it's a lottery ticket, it's a speculation, it's a casino bet, and they're going to lose. And that's the way it always works out.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that. But if I may, just for a moment, it then, you know, the narrative has been that David slayed Goliath, but Goliath is still in the game, and it may actually turn out the way the hedge fund shorters wanted all along, right?
It may very well. It depends on whether GameStop is a, you know, because of all this attention, do they get a new business plan? Do they get new financing? Do they renegotiate their store leases in malls where people aren't going? There's certainly the potential the company could survive. It's got new management, maybe in a different format. But those are very long odds. And the speculators, you know, in every mania, ever going back, we talked about this last week, going back centuries, there have been manias over things like tulip bulbs. Someone gets left holding the bag, and inevitably, it's the people who can least afford to lose all their money, even if it's a little bit of money.
What else should we
mention?
You know,
you're buying fractional shares or a few shares, but still, that $200 or $300 or $500 you put in there,
yeah,
because you could, because it was free, because you could buy fractional shares or so forth, that's real money to people who have credit scores under 650. That's grocery bills and rent.
Okay, 312-981-7200. We'll pause here, update you on some numbers, and then come back. Anything else Terry's got on her mind, we'll hear that, and then we'll hear your questions and comments, too. 312-981-7200. Financial columnist Terry Savage at terrysavage.com is on the line. 1218 now. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Terry Savage is our Wednesday guest here just until 1230 today. Terry, before we go to calls, anything else you want to pipe off about?
No, let's take calls. I have a board meeting that starts at 12:30. I'm sorry to leave early today, but yeah, let's hear what people want to know.
Hey, John Williams, ask Terry Savage, how does she feel about life insurance as a retirement investment? I maxed out a 401k, can't contribute to Roth or an IRA. I'm 55 years old.
Well, good for you. If you can have, listen, if you have self-employment income, you could have a solo 401k, easy to set up, and you could put a lot of money away for that. But let me just say this. There's nothing wrong with saving after tax. If you've got all that money put away on a tax-deferred basis, you can save money after tax. In fact, maybe that's a good idea, because the money you save now won't come out later at potentially much higher tax rates. So I never heard anyone complain about having too much money in retirement. Stop looking for tax shelters and now look in your own name, or better yet, in the name of your revocable living trust, for investments that have the potential to create long-term gains for you or long-term income, like real estate maybe.
But what about permanent insurance? What about some whole life
product? You're paying mortality charges. Every insurance agent's going to call me up now and tell me I'm wrong about this. As long as you have enough life insurance to cover your insurance needs, why, even though they say you get a slightly higher rate inside an insurance policy, why would you pay the mortality charges that go along with that insurance when you might do something economically more significant with the money? So it's not just the tax consequences that matter, it's the cost, and it's the other opportunities you have that can get you maybe a better return than the guaranteed minimum interest rate inside an insurance policy.
Lori's got a question for you on line two. You're on WGN. Hi, Lori.
Hi, John. Hi, Terry. How are you guys?
We're good.
Good. So I'm wondering about student loans. I have about $40,000 in privately held student loans, and then $20,000 in federal student loans that I don't have to pay on currently. And I'm wondering what Terry's advice is, if I should try and focus on the ones I don't have to pay right now, or if I should leave those alone and focus on the ones that are accruing interest and that I need to be paying.
Yeah, well, they're not accruing interest during this deferral period, and you don't need to make payments on federal student loans. And private student loans are now the Roach Motel of finance. You could get in very easily, but you can't get out, and you can't refinance those. So the faster, and the rates are probably even higher, maybe not, but the faster you can get out of those private student loans, the better. And, you know, if you have a home and you refinance it and use the money to pay off student loans, you cannot deduct the interest on that portion that you did to refinance your student loans. But still, the interest on your mortgage is going to be much, much lower probably than the interest on your student loan. And if you're in that position, many people aren't, where you can get extra money and pay down your student loans, private student loans especially,
yeah,
I would do that now.
I understand the temptation, though, because you're cutting at all principal when you're paying on those federal loans in forbearance. So it's very tempting to say, oh, good, this is my chance to really cut away at that thing. But you say go for the private loan that is still...
It depends on your interest rates. First of all, I think there will be something done, and that's my column this week, which we don't have probably time to go into, but it's up at terrysavage.com. I think there will be some kind of relief, at least maybe on the interest. That was my proposal anyway, not the principal, of federal student loans. But there's going to be no relief from those private student loans. They are not going to refinance you. Yes, if you have good credit, you can go to a place like SoFi or Credible and see if you can refinance your private student loans. That's something else to look at. But if you had a choice right now, I'd be trying to figure out every which way I can get out from under those private student loans. They are under no incentive to refinance you.
Plus, ladies, isn't it possible the federal government is going to give you $10,000 on your federal loan anyway?
Well, this is the point of my column. There are a lot of people, John, that will rise up in arms and say, oh, my goodness, that's so not fair. I paid my student loans, or my parents and grandparents have written me because of this column saying, oh, no, we saved, first of all, and then we paid off the loans. I'm not advocating giving away the principal of the student loans. And, in fact, I've discussed this with Senator Durbin 2 years ago when I first proposed this and sent him the column again. I have had emails from people who started out with $12,000 of student loans and 33 years later still owe something like $30,000. It's because federal student loans carry the same interest rate as the rates that were in effect when you took it out. And years ago, 10, 12 years ago, rates on those loans were 8%. So a mountain of interest piles up. Now, we tell people they can refinance their mortgages to a lower rate,
mm-hmm,
but we don't let them refinance federal student loans. And the lenders for private student loans won't do it for you unless you can go somewhere else, like, as I said, SoFi or Credible. But the point is, the federal government's borrowing at 1% today, 1% for 10 years. My proposal was that we go back and readjust the interest backward. So like credit card debt, where when you get stuck, it's not what you bought 9 years ago. It's the pileup of interest behind you. Ditto with federal student loans. So my proposal is we re-age those loans, they call in the lending business, or we just adjust the interest rate backward, I think you'll find out many people have already paid off the balance of their loans, the principal.
Oh, sure, sure.
And some interest as well. And we've got them buried for life. That does not help America.
Well, that all makes sense. But you watch, they're going to write them a $10,000 check, some of them. And that...
that may very well happen.
That may make you crazy, too. Good luck, Lori. I appreciate your call. I'm glad you were able to get in. Carol has the every week we get this question call. Let's go ahead and deal with it now. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering if a lot of people still didn't get the $600 stimulus. Last time I got a check, don't ask me why, because I'm a senior with direct deposit, and I had filed taxes. The last time I did file was 2018.
But you did get your check?
You got the first one, but you're wondering why you haven't got the second one, right?
Right.
Okay, watch this. The bureau that disperses the checks is not really the IRS. I've actually talked to that bureau. They have explained to me that they were under such pressure to get money out the door by the January 15th deadline that some people who got direct deposit because of Social Security wound up getting debit cards. The debit cards are blue with silver stars. They're a Visa card, and people are shocked. What's this? They sent out debit cards. They sent out checks. They did do some direct deposits. And here's the critical point. If you have still not received your $600 stimulus, or maybe you didn't get the original $1,200, but if they looked at the 2020 tax return, you'd qualify. John, give me 1 minute, and I can do this in 30 seconds, like the old FedEx disclaimer.
Yeah.
If you have not received your first stimulus or your second stimulus, you must file right now your 2020 tax return. And on line 30, if you qualify with income under $75,000 on a single return, $150,000 on a joint return, in 2020, you can go on line 30 and say, I never got the original $1,200, I never got my $600, or maybe you got an amount that was less than the $600 this time around and don't know why. You could put the difference in. That's a refundable tax credit. File electronically, include your banking information, and within 3 weeks of filing, you should have a deposit in your account.
Think about
Did
that.
Did we do a good job?
Line number 30. Okay, Carol, good luck.
And you must file. A lot of people who didn't get, two more key points. You're going to say, well, I didn't make enough, I don't have enough income from 2020 to file.
Yeah.
But if you didn't get your stimulus, file anyway. Just put on line 30, where's my stimulus check? And make very sure that if your adult children took you as a dependent, if you're a senior, or if you're a college graduate now and you're out on your own and your parents, when they look back at the 2018 and 19 returns, you were still a dependent, make sure your parents don't declare you as a dependent, or your adult children don't declare you as a dependent. File your own return. Say you're not eligible to be claimed as a dependent, and then you will get both the original check and the current check.
Alice, what can we do for you? You're on WGN with Terry Savage.
Hi, Terry. I have a question. My granddaughter is financially insecure, and I need a book to show her how to save.
Oh, Alice, I didn't pay you for this, but I really want to say something. I put my heart and soul into writing a new edition of The Savage Truth on Money. It came out just a little over a year ago. It's on Amazon. The Savage Truth on Money, third edition, I think it's cost $11. If it doesn't do exactly what you just asked for, I will personally give you your money back. I wrote this for young people starting out, for adults who've gotten caught up in credit, who want to know how to start investing. Sure, there's a whole section on stock market sophisticated things, on college savings, but it's a basic book at the beginning, and it will do for your granddaughter just what it was intended to do. So it's The Savage Truth on Money, and you can get it on Amazon, the third edition.
Great. Thank you, Terry.
Alice, good for you. I'm glad you asked. Paul, you're on.
Log that as a commercial.
I won't. It's the truth. It's good content. Let's talk to Paul. You're on WGN. Paul, what can we do for you?
Thank you both. I'm getting PUA benefits, but I have a chance to work for a couple months. Can I put PUA on hold or just not certify weekly and sort of resume when I'm out of work, or will I have to reapply from scratch?
The answer is I don't know, because I've heard this both ways from IDES and people who have successfully done it. The point is that when you start making income, you will have to certify. And I'm not sure down the road, quite honestly, whether you'll be able to reopen your original claim if you're laid off or if you'll have to file a new claim that will, of course, take into account the benefits you've already earned in this calendar year. So I wish I could give you a good, honest answer, and you can't get through to IDES and get a consistent answer on that one. I've asked several times.
How tempting is it, Jerry? Is the money good if you go for 2 months?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Paul. I know. That's one thing I have to weigh. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
See, right now, first of all, you have to weigh the extension and how long. This is what they're debating in Congress, by the way. The Republicans, all Republicans, but many saying, oh, well, you give enough people enough money and they won't go back to work. Well, okay, you have to look at the economic consequences. You get the extra $300 a week for a while. You have the extension of unemployment benefits.
Right.
You're supposed to certify if you are able to go back to work and that you are hunting for a job, so you don't want to lie about your certification that work is available. So it's a very complex situation, and I cannot give you with certainty. I know what they say, but I can't give you the certain answer about whether, depending on how long you go back to work and so forth, whether you'd start a new claim or whether you'd reopen your old one.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I can see the dilemma right there. It's 12:30. We're out of time. TerrySavage.com. You can get her book, The Savage Truth on Money, third edition, at Amazon. Do you have a link to it on your website, Terry?
Yeah, sure. It's all over my website, and also you could post questions on my blog there. I will come back next week for a much longer time if you'll have me.
Nice to hear you. I'll bet we will. 630 said, tell Terry Savage thanks for her constant, pertinent, amazing information. Her checklist of what to do if you think you've been scammed by the IDES fraud issue of what to do was extremely detailed, helpful, and reassuring. Thank you. Thank you. It's 12:30. Well done, Terry. Next Wednesday, she'll be back. Wintrust Business Lunch continues on WGN Radio. Okay, let's visit with Annie Coakley. She is the executive director of Downtown Evanston, which, as the cities and suburbs go around the Chicagoland area and the neighborhoods, I would say is consistently one of the towns that works the hardest to get you to visit, to shop, and to find something for you to do. It's not the first time we've had a conversation like this. Annie, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me. And thanks for saying that. And I didn't pay you to say that.
You did not, although we'd like it if you did. But in the meantime, let's talk about what you guys are doing, which is a way to get people to, even amidst the COVID, even amidst winter time, get out, explore, do things, and get rewarded for doing things in Evanston.
Absolutely. So, okay. Winter Games Evanston is the name of the event, and it's the whole month of February. It is a game full of challenges. It's sort of a riff on the Olympics. I personally think that many Chicagoans, Evanstonians, anyone in this region kind of shies away from winter. We're a winter city. It's never going to change, so why not embrace it? We've been inside way too much. So let's get outside and sort of have fun in the winter months with all of the things that snow provides in terms of fun things to do. So anyone that signs up, you sign up through an app. It's called EventZee, and you are assigned a team number or a team color, excuse me. So either team green, blue, yellow, or red. And then you have a series of challenges that are presented to you. Some of them are outdoors, like go snowshoeing or snowbirding. You build a snowman, ice skating, and you take pictures of yourself doing those things, and then you get points for it. In terms of supporting our businesses, there are 90 businesses participating. They are also assigned a color. And each business has a sign in their window, their team green, and then they have LED lights that light up in those specific colors as well. So it also adds a little element of lighting. And if you support that specific store, your team green, and you go to a green store, you get double points. And every week we're going to announce winners who receive gift cards to Gearhead, which is a sporting goods store in downtown Evanston.
I see.
And we have thousands of dollars worth of prizes. So we're really hoping to entice people to continue to support our businesses. But at the same time, you know, have a good time, be outside. This is also about, you know, physical and mental health. You know, we need to get off our screens and to get outside and have fun in the snow. And boy, we sure got some, you know, and I didn't order that either, although I wish I could say I did.
I'll tell you, the snow then is working out for you, isn't it?
It's great. Yeah, it's perfect. And we're getting some more, and hopefully we have more snow throughout the month of February for all of our additional events. We do have events as a part of this as well. One that I'm pretty excited about is February 20th. We've hired ice sculptors, like ice carving demonstrations will take place at Fountain Square, which is in the heart of downtown Evanston, on Saturday, February 20th from 1 to 4. And we're also partnering with Temperance Beer, our own brewery, one of our breweries in Evanston, for a fire pit and storytelling series on February 18th. They have a brand new beer they're featuring, and it's called Where I'm From. And 100% of the proceeds from that beer sales go to the Evanston Reparations Fund.
So if I go on the site, or if I go on the, pardon me, so if I go on the site or app, I'm going
to
see, okay, I'm Team Yellow, here's my stores, here's my activities, and then just start to go do or shop at these places, accumulate points, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
And yes. If I get it, will it be just one winner, or will I achieve a gift card?
No, we're doing a very Olympic style. We're going to have a gold, silver, and bronze winner at the end. But each week, the highest earners of points will be eligible to redeem for prizes, which are gift cards to, like I said, Gearhead, one of our sponsors. And we have a dedicated website for this event, evanstonwintergames.com. Of course, you can follow Downtown Evanston on our social media, Instagram, Facebook, to get more information. It's pretty much widely, publicized. We're really trying to get the word out there. And people are signing up, daily. We, I think, had 100 people sign up yesterday. So it's all in good fun. Yeah.
You don't need to be an Evanston resident either, or do you?
You do not. Not at all. No. We welcome everyone.
And their dollars. And remember, the activities include nature hikes, sledding, ice skating, volunteering, warming up by the Winter Games fire pits. I could do that. There's winter art and things like that as well. So what a clever idea. Okay, the site to sign up one more time is
EvanstonWinterGames.com has all the information on everything, and then information on how to download the app, which is called EventZ, EventZEE.com.
Started events on Winter, Evanston, EvanstonWinterGames.com. Okay.
That's the easiest way to do it, yes.
We'll start there. Annie, good luck, and thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, there's something to do. Can't say nothing to do. It's 12:42 on WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's go back into the newsroom. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. New home sales plummeted in Chicago last year. A year-end report released by the home building industry consultant Tracy Cross & Associates shows a 38.5% drop in 2020. That's the lowest figure in the Cross records dating back to 1995. Cranes reports one of the reasons for the drop in city sales appears to be empty nesters pausing their moves from the suburbs to Chicago. Kraft Heinz is reportedly in talks to sell its Planters snack brand to Hormel Foods, the maker of Skippy peanut butter. The deal is reportedly worth about $3 billion and could be announced as soon as next week. Thousands of workers at Ford's Chicago assembly plant are temporarily out of work. The automotive factory reduced its workforce to just one of three shifts because of a parts shortage. Ford hasn't said how long the layoffs will last or exactly how many workers are affected. Ford employs 6,500 workers at the factory at 130 in Torrance and the stamping plant in Chicago Heights. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Megan Curran joins us. She's the Chief Marketing and Experience Officer at the Shedd Aquarium. Go to sheddaquarium.com, and you can. Hey, Megan, this is John. You're on WGN. How's it going there?
It's good, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. Of course, we've been coming into our building for a while, but people have not been able to come into yours. But for a while now, you have been able to reopen, right?
Yes. We were delighted to be able to open to our members last Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then to the general public starting just this past Saturday. So we've had a great time seeing people back in the building and being able to connect people with animals and feel really confident that we've got a safe experience for them.
Are you saying 25% also?
Yes, we're being very conservative and have started a little bit below what we've calculated at 25%. And we're going to continue to make sure that We feel confident that people have distance to space. We've got one-way visit flows, so you go through the galleries in one way, so it's easy to keep your distance from the group ahead of and behind you. And we continue to enforce masks and ask everyone to get their tickets in advance so that they can find times within our hourly time slots where there's tickets available.
You know, Megan, we visited on this show last week with folks from the field, and they said that normally they're not much over 25%. So actually, this doesn't radically impact their revenue or the number of people that are able to come in. Are you in the same boat? Is it normally less than 50% of your capacity anyway?
Well, I would definitely say that on weekdays in the winter, we have considerably more capacity. But on our weekends, we definitely feel a difference. We're considerably less crowded on the weekends, which is great for guests. It means that you have really one-on-one experiences with each habitat and can get, you know, nose-to-nose with the animals. But it definitely has an impact, and we've prepared for it. But we also are really grateful to our members that have supported us through all of this time, and every ticket sale really helps us start to build a recovery.
Is there anything unique about going in the wintertime that's different than in the summer? You're not a zoo, you're an aquarium. Are there some animals or species that are maybe more interesting to see at wintertime?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Right now, all of them are super interesting to see. Our dolphin and whale calves have grown quite a bit since we were open before, so I'd say since the summer, they're really fun to watch, and I definitely encourage those who have not yet seen them to come and see how they've developed. What I could say is that we have a new cuttlefish exhibit in our oceanarium, and they are able to adapt their colors for their surroundings, which is pretty spectacularly cool. But they're also colorblind, which I just learned, and I thought that was just such an interesting ability and also fact about them. So definitely check them out.
And I guess everything is open, right? Nothing is closed when you go to Shedd, or are there some areas because of the pandemic you had to close off?
Sure. Our areas are open. Our Stingray Touch, which is seasonal, is not open right now. Our Oceanarium Amphitheater is open. You can go in and sit and watch the animals, but we're not doing our aquatic presentations. We're not doing a lot of those chats or narrated presentations that really cause people to gather and make it difficult for distancing. Yeah. But we do continue to have animal enrichment sessions throughout the day, and it's a really wonderful experience.
Be clear about that. So when I go there, I can sit in that auditorium, and then I see dolphins or whales jump in the air and seals and all that, and it's a big show. You're not doing those shows. Is that it?
We are not doing those presentations. That's correct.
What is admission like then? Do you have to do it online, or can you buy your ticket that day when you walk up?
So I encourage buying the tickets in advance. While we do have staff to help you on site, especially on our weekends, our Saturday tickets are now all almost sold. We're glad to see that, you know, that people are interested in visiting again. So please do check in advance to make sure that you can pick an hourly slot that has availability. Really easy to do, and plenty of spots available.
I wonder if the animals miss us, like the penguins. Are they happy to see us when we come back?
That's a great question. I wish I knew exactly what they think.
well, ask them.
That we're delighted to have people back to see the animals.
Well, yeah, what does this mean for you all staffing-wise? Does this re-employ people or re-engage volunteers? What happens there?
Yeah, so I'm really proud that we were able to keep our staff, our guest-facing staff, employed during this last closure. They, you know, we did trainings. Some of them learned, you know, took language classes and learned Spanish. Some of them helped us in our gardens and in the oceanarium. So we kept our staff engaged. But this is really important to help keep our building operating. And we did that with confidence we'd be able to open soon. And so it's really nice to see staff back on site. Our essential animal care and facilities staff have been coming in throughout the entire time, but our guest-facing staff is really glad to be in the building, and I'm really glad to see them back.
Okay. How many days a week, by the way, are you guys going to be open now?
We're open every day.
Every day. Okay. And 9 a.m., I think I saw somewhere, is when it opens most days. Is that right?
Most days. On weekdays, we are going to 10 a.m. opening, but 9 to 10 a.m. opening each day.
This may not be your area, but were you all the beneficiaries of any federal programs to help you guys pay your bills, feed your fish, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I can say that we did participate in the PPP program last time. And so we are, I think that program's still in process and still investigating the other opportunities that might be available this next time around.
I remember last time we spoke to somebody from Shedd, the cost of just feeding the animals is startling, and you've got to continue to feed the animals. So let's support the animals and the staff, and it's good to know we can go back in. Megan Curran is the Chief Marketing and Experience Officer at the Shedd. Find out more, sheddaquarium.org. Okay, best to everybody over there, Megan. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Bye.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch.